Christmas. Christmas is such an important time, isn't it, to lots of people for lots of different reasons. But often it is the tradition that is very important and the thing that people value almost the most. Our family, like many others, has lots of different things that we do year in, year out. In early December, a Christmas tree is bought. And then we decide where to put it. I must say, we sort of go around all the options, but every year we end up putting it in exactly the same place because it's the best place for it. We always don't need the discussion, really. But then we get the box of decorations down, the lights carefully put up there from the previous year, and then we begin that rather intricate process of stringing up lights between carefully placed drawing pins in the door frames whilst balancing precariously on chairs and coffee tables, and sometimes chairs on coffee tables. Other traditions in our family include trying to write a family letter. We don't always manage it. And putting the cards in the post at the very last available posting date, or sometimes beyond. And Christmas cards through the doors in a similar way. Stockings go up on Christmas Eve, along with the mince pie and a glass of sherry and a couple of carrots for any nocturnal visitors, and so on and so forth. We have lots of traditions in our family, and I'm sure you do as well. Traditions, they don't just persist, they often grow as well, don't they, over the years. And they're powerful things, traditions. They give us a shared sense of identity, they connect us with the past, and they give us a sense of reassurance in the present, in a rapidly changing world like ours. There's something constant to rely on. In an uncertain world, they can give us certainty and stability. We know what to expect. But traditions can also create problems. For those seeking novelty, their predictability can frankly be a bit boring. And they sometimes have a way of restricting and constraining, making the unpredictable predictable, making the exciting bland, and making the wild a bit tame. And that can, I think, be a problem with our traditional nativity scene. It can look rather neat, polished and fixed. It's as if we get it out each year, we set it up, we admire it a bit, and then we carefully put it away again, wrapping the pieces and putting them back in their box. Tame and separate from everyday life, life then goes on much as before. But if we look afresh at what Luke tells us in his carefully researched account of Jesus' birth, we might realise that it's not quite how we imagine it, not quite how maybe even some of the carol writers imagine it. And with careful reading, we might find that it's not actually the traditional image that many of us have. The reality could, in some ways, be more exciting and more relevant than we have come to imagine it to be. Now, just a bit of a disclaimer. I'm trying not to be like that. The infamous Bishop of Durham, I think it was, who one year questioned the resurrection of Christ and caused a great uproar, and soon afterwards his cathedral was struck by lightning. I don't intend to do anything similar. I just want to question one particular aspect of the Christmas story, which has become established in our minds, which we think is a fundamental part of it, but which I'd ask is just to question whether it really is true. The traditional nativity story involves Mary and Joseph arriving in Bethlehem after a long journey. Mary is heavily pregnant, and they go from door to door of local inns looking for a place to stay. You know, this is the classic school nativity, isn't it, in a whole series. The more innkeepers, the better, really, because you've more parts you can give out to the children. A whole long procession of, sorry, no room, no room, no room. But finding nowhere to stay, they eventually end up in a cattle shed or somewhere similar, where Mary gives birth to Jesus, presumably assisted by Joseph, isolated essentially though from the rest of humanity until visited by a group of shepherds. The problem is, this is not what Luke says. Well, he says some of it, but not all of what I've just described. Quite a lot of that we have sort of filled in with our own imaginations. I think it's on the radio. Is it a quiz called The Unbelievable Truth? They have a whole set of facts, A lot of them are true, but then they put in some falsehoods in at the same time. You have to try and guess which is which. What I've just told you contains a lot of what Luke tells us, but a few bits that aren't there. Luke does tell us that Mary and Joseph went from Nazareth to Bethlehem because of the Roman census, and that while they were there, the time came for Mary to give birth. And when she had done so, she placed Jesus in a manger because there was no room at the inn. Well, the word inn, translated in the version of the Bible we had read to us today, is a Greek word. You're going to get two Greek words today. It's not too late at night. You can focus on some Greek. The Greek word is katalima. See, Luke, who wrote this Gospel account, wrote in Greek. That's what everyone wrote in those days, the intelligent people, those who wanted to sort of write things down. They wrote in Greek. And the word for that we translate in is katalima. There are just a few words in Greek which we've built up this big long sort of story. We've filled in the gaps with our imagination, and that's one of the key words. And we've ended up with this drafty stable with an open door. But I'd suggest to you it's not there in the original Greek. It's very unlikely that Mary and Joseph ended up going to give birth in a stable. There are several reasons for this. Firstly, 2,000 years ago, and in many places today, people kept their animals in their own houses. Now, that might seem like a strange idea to us, or maybe not such a strange idea. We have cats and dogs, after all. But they would have kept rather bigger animals in their own houses, partly because most people could not afford more than one building. And why not? You've got your inbuilt source of central heating, haven't you? A cow produces a lot of heat and warm things out the other end as well. Okay, if you get used to the smell, it's quite a convenient arrangement. In the Bible, it talks about leading your animals out. And that probably means out of the house. Jesus talks about that. So, generally speaking, people lived with their animals in their house, overnight at least, and then they sort of let them out in the morning. Secondly, it would be a completely weird, alien idea for those familiar with Eastern hospitality. The idea that Mary and Joseph would have been knocking on the doors of sort of commercial establishments to try to find lodging. They would have stayed with Joseph's family. That was his family town, after all. They would have been welcomed into the home. If it was a guest house or an inn that they were looking for, Luke would probably have used a different word, not katalima, I'm giving you a second word now, but pandokion. There you go. It's more likely that he'd have used that word. I'll come back to the word katalima in a second with our third point. It's important to understand just a little bit more about the layout of those houses. So, generally speaking, there would have been one big room, and most things happened in that room. Jesus talks about the light under the bushel, and he says you shouldn't put it under a bushel, because otherwise how will it light the whole house? Well, he's talking about a single-roomed house, isn't he? It's not going to light the whole house if there are lots of rooms. There was basically one room for the people and the animals. But there was also, quite often, just another area, maybe at the back, a guest room, or possibly on the roof, that was called the katalima. And it's this room, the katalima, that Jesus was later to eat Passover with his disciples. You read that in Luke chapter 22. So a katalima was probably not an inn, as we imagine it. It was probably the guest room. And so Luke is telling us that there was no room in the guest room for Mary and Joseph. Now, that could be because it was already full. There were already other visitors there. It's a busy time of year with the census and all that. Or it could be that he's saying that when it came to give birth, there was no space in the guest room for that to happen. Now, I don't know how many of you, probably quite a few, have been present at the birth of a child. I made most of them. One of them I couldn't quite get there in time, but all the others, I've been present at the birth of my children. And you do need quite a lot of room, actually. You know, there's quite a few people involved. I realise the NHS is a bit different to first century Palestine, but, you know, people are coming and going the whole time. You know, if you've got a tiny little space, it's not going to work, is it? So they almost certainly, Mary would have needed to give birth, not up in the guest room, even if they did have access to it, but down in the main space. And then, of course,
the natural place to put your baby is in the manger. You think, well, what a crazy idea. Why would you put the baby in the manger? Isn't it going to be eaten by a cow? No, probably not. Well, cows are vegetarian for a start. But manger, I mean, it's a good space, really, isn't it? When we were on holiday once with a small child, we couldn't carry it, had a cot with us, and there wasn't one there. So we used our suitcase. It was a perfect place for a baby. We didn't zip it up. Babies need to breathe. But the suitcase was the perfect size. I understand that in the past people would quite often put their babies in a drawer. And again, keep the drawer open rather than closing. Probably people here have slept in drawers. Or maybe not. Maybe you haven't. But I understand it's quite a common thing. But so the natural place in that setting was to put the baby in the manger. It was, they would have just been that in the house. But the key point I'm trying to make, really, you can go away. I suggest you do reread that account. Don't read, you know, get facts from a carol, because carol have sort of interpreted and then sort of made it into a song. Go back to what Luke writes, which is a carefully researched account, the Greek if you can. But the key point, really, I'm trying to make is it's very likely that Jesus was not born in a place which was hidden away from the rest of society. That he was not born in a carefully prepared guest room, or certainly not a palace, as you might expect a king. And he was not born away in a rather weird sort of place, which we can't really get our head around. A stable? Who would be born in a stable? Okay, it was Jesus. But the point is that Jesus, I think, was born into our world in the midst of the main living space of ordinary, busy family life, with all its chaos, all its noise, all its smell. Jesus wasn't born over there, away from everyday life, and therefore inviting us to sort of step outside our usual environments and routines, and asking us to make a visit once a year to go and see him in that strange place. Jesus was actually born in the heart of the home. Like any other first century Palestinian, a baby would have been. He was born in the heart of the home, and he asks whether we will make space for him in the chaos, in the heart of our own normal everyday lives. We don't need to take ourselves off to some drafty, strange place, you know, luxury denying this drafty stable, or to a carefully prepared place, perhaps akin to the guest room, the church. Jesus actually comes into our own everyday spaces. Jesus is Emmanuel, which means God with us. Of course, it can be very unsettling, I think, to have our old presumptions questioned, and I suggest you question what I'm telling you. Don't just take it from me. But having our cherished traditions threatened can be unsettled. But sometimes the shaking up is good for us. Like the stirring of the Christmas pudding, it allows for new possibilities, the possibility of greater things, the growth in understanding. Jesus wasn't afraid to challenge human tradition, where it stood in the way of a full and life-giving understanding of God. He overturned the tables in the temple. He told the Bible teachers of the day that they did not know their Bibles. He told the religious purists that they'd got it all wrong. And most of us don't take kindly to being challenged in that way. But maybe that's what we need. As another preacher has put it, the traditions and habits that we cling to don't serve us very well, and they don't give us what we hoped they would. As a society, we have more and better food than we've ever had, yet we are getting less and less healthy. We have more wealth than before, yet we can't overcome the division between rich and poor. We have better medication than ever, but we don't know how to face death. Albert Einstein once said, "The definition of foolishness is doing the same thing and expecting a different result." If we just keep on doing the same things in our nation, in our communities, in our own lives, life isn't going to get any better. Something needs to change. And something has changed. Something fundamentally changed 2,000 years ago when God in Jesus came in to this world, into the very center of the lives of those he met. And we need him to do the same for us today. In one of his letters, the Apostle Paul says something that's frankly a bit odd. He says, this is Paul, he's a man. He says, I am in the pains of childbirth until Christ is formed in you. He writes that in the book of the letter to the Galatians. And that idea is picked up in one of our best known carols, O Little Town of Bethlehem, which ends, O Holy Child of Bethlehem, descend to us, we pray, cast out our sin and enter in, be born in us today. Be born in us today. Well, the traditions of Christmas can be pleasant and reassuring, but the truth of Christmas is that that same Jesus, the Son of God, who took human form and was born in Bethlehem 2,000 years ago, can be born in us today, in our own lives, in the heart of those busy, noisy, chaotic, confused lives. And when he does that, he can bring his healing, he can bring his peace, his purpose, and his forgiveness into our lives. And he will do that if, just as they did in Bethlehem, we will make space for him and welcome him into the very heart of our everyday lives, this Christmas and beyond. Amen.